It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We examine views about America being a Christian nation and the forces of Christian nationalism in politics. The new Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson of Louisiana, is a Southern Baptist on Fox News Sunday.
I'm a Bible-believing Christian. I believe in the sanctity of every single human life. So I come to Congress with deep, personally held convictions. But guess what? So do my 434 other colleagues in the House.
Be part of the discussion by calling in with a question or comments, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Andrew Whitehead is an associate professor of sociology, director of the Association of Religion Data Archives at the Center for the Study of Religion and American Culture at Indiana University, Purdue University, Indianapolis, author of two books on Christian nationalism. Andrew, welcome to the Ideas Network.
I'm really happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
You write in a recent issue of Time magazine that Speaker Mike Johnson has never called himself a Christian nationalist, but you and others include Johnson in the Christian nationalist movement. Why is that?
Yeah, well, what we find as we study Christian nationalism and have over the last decade or so, using large surveys of the American public, we're able to identify various elements of Christian nationalism as we define it and understand it. And when we look at Mike Johnson, both in past speeches and interviews, in the legislation he proposes, we find that over and over, he really does align with each of these elements. And so it isn't really a question of whether he personally identifies as a Christian nationalist, but as we look at what Christian nationalism is, he really provides a very good example of each of those elements overall.
How do you define Christian nationalism?
Yeah, so we define Christian nationalism as a cultural framework. And by that, we mean it's a collection of myths and traditions and symbols and narratives and value systems. And Christian nationalism as a cultural framework idealizes and advocates for the fusion of a very particular expression of Christianity with American civic life. So Christian nationalism holds that this version of Christianity should be the principal and undisputed cultural framework guiding life in the United States, and that the government should vigorously preserve and protect this cultural framework as the central organizing framework.
Where is the Bible in this? Because you mentioned Mike Johnson's speeches in his first speech after being elected speaker, saying, you know, the Bible is very clear that God is the one who raises up those in authority. How do you parse those words?
Yeah, that's a really great question. So, yeah, as he was giving that first speech, it really stood out to me and others who have been studying, you know, religion and politics or Christian nationalism. And he's likely referring to Romans 13:1, where Paul, as he's writing to his Roman readers, says, "Everyone must submit himself to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except that which God established. The authorities that exist have been established by God." And in other places, Mike Johnson would talk about how, you know, the United States is a Christian nation with Judeo-Christian roots. And so when I hear him using that language or talking about how he just has a quote unquote biblical worldview and that is it, what we find is that type of rhetoric is really doing a lot of extra work, right? So when he says we need to make America godly or I have a biblical worldview, there is a host of cultural elements that come along with that phrase of biblical worldview, because there are many expressions of Christianity, even in the United States, that would take various aspects of the Bible and read those literally that would come to very different conclusions than Mike Johnson. And so that's the key point. When we're talking about Christian nationalism, it really is a particular expression of Christianity that folks like Mike Johnson or others, other Americans that embrace this cultural framework, are essentially referring to a host of other beliefs and cultural values. And so when we hear, you know, I just follow the Bible, well, then the question becomes, well, which parts of the Bible and exactly how are you interpreting those? Because different groups interpret those in different ways.
Andrew Whitehead with us as we look at the influence of Christian nationalism in America, Indianapolis-based Center for the Study of Religion and American Culture, where Andrew is based. You can join in with your questions and comments at 800-642-1234. A bit about you here. You grew up in a small farming community in Indiana where being a good citizen and a good Christian were equated. Can you describe what those days your upbringing was like?
Yeah. So I, as you said, I grew up in Northern Indiana, a small town. You know, the last 80 years or so, it's hovered between 1500 and 2000 people. And, you know, my backyard was a cornfield. And it was a really wonderful place to grow up where everyone knew everybody else. And we worshiped alongside, you know, those that were our electricians or school teachers or florists. And this was where I was raised in the faith and taught, you know, these values and beliefs of caring for others, caring for your neighbors, for those less fortunate. And so it really was a wonderful place to grow up. But then I started to realize as I grew older and moved, you know, away from the community, that some of these values and beliefs of loving others, or who we should see as our neighbor, was in some ways limited. It wasn't necessarily that we should love everyone or see everyone as our neighbor, but only folks that maybe align with particular values or beliefs. And so as I started to study Christian nationalism, I realized that in many ways, the Christianity that I was raised in and around embraced a lot of these elements, where when we're talking about folks that maybe have different political values or beliefs or who are immigrants or refugees, that was where some of the lines were drawn on who could be a true American, who could be a true Christian, or who really has access to the benefits of civil society. And so that was when I started to really kind of wrestle with and try and disentangle the Christianity that I had been handed from Christian nationalism and recognizing that there are expressions of the Christian faith that do confront and oppose this and try to expand how we define our neighbor and who we love and what it means to be Christian in the public sphere.
And as we define that, why do we see sometimes the word white in front of Christian nationalism?
Yeah, that's a really great question. So a lot of scholars, including myself, when we talk about Christian nationalism, we do want to augment it with white. And that's not necessarily referring to the skin color of a person that holds or embraces Christian nationalism, but it's recognizing that when we look at the United States and its history, Christianity was a key part of a lot of those different moments. And as we were thinking through, you know, even before the dawn of the United States, what it meant to be a citizen in this place, the folks that were doing that work really were identifying who belonged and who didn't, primarily along racial and ethnic lines. Mm. And so when white Christians and white Christian communities were involved in creating these racial categories to essentially make sense of why they could push indigenous populations off their lands or to enslave Africans that they had taken from their home country, white and white was equated with being good and Christian, while non-white or black equaled bad or heathen. And some of this had to do with the doctrine of discovery and this idea that anywhere white Christians went, they could claim that land for their home country and for God, and legitimating that in the will of God. And then we see from that moment, the mainstreaming of the modern narrative of the U.S. as a Christian nation was primarily located within white Christian religious traditions, both evangelical and mainline. And then finally, in the social science research that I've been a part of and others are working on over the last several years, we find that Christian nationalism and this idea of the Christian nation really does fall along ethno-racial lines and allowing white Americans that embrace it to essentially ignore the fact that there are different realities for people of different skin colors in the U.S. And seeing that history or current injustices as just a part of the way things are rather than something that has been created and perpetuated according to essentially keeping the US ordered the way that it has been, which as a group, white Americans tend to have greater access to power and privilege and wealth, according to and in opposition to, in comparison to Americans of other skin colors or racial or ethnic groups. Hmm.
Sociologist Andrew Whitehead studies Christian nationalism, writes books on this worldview, and you can discuss at any point. Call in with a question, share comments, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We discuss the rising influence of Christian nationalism, how it connects with political ideology and beliefs that America should be a Christian nation. The new House Speaker Mike Johnson emphasizes strong-held Christian beliefs in his politics. Call in with a question. You can share perspectives, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Andrew Whitehead with us, Associate Professor of Sociology and directs the Association of Religion Data Archives in Indianapolis. Andrew, what are the Christian nationalist movement's goals for the United States? What is the vision?
Yeah, that's a great question. And, you know, for this, I really rely on a number of large national surveys of the American public where we're able to ask a series of questions and measure the degree to which Americans embrace Christian nationalism. And then through asking other questions, start to see, you know, exactly what do they support or what is that vision? And we find over and over across a number of peer-reviewed studies and in our book that it really does contain several key elements. And so the first of these elements with Christian nationalism, this vision, is a society that would align with traditionalist social arrangements. And so this is a desire to see a society where men essentially lead and women support. Marriage is ideally heterosexual, and families are made up of a mom and dad who are married, and they're committed to procreation. And so with Christian nationalism, families that align with this vision will have the easiest access to civil rights and liberties. And those families that do not embrace these ideals will be denied access or, you know, have a lot of hurdles placed in their way. And so when we survey the American public, there's greater opposition to gay marriage, greater opposition to overturning Roe versus Wade, more patriarchal views of family life, believing that fertility is key and important. And so that's the vision of a society that they would like to see exist. A second element is a comfort with authoritarian social control. And so the idea here is that this is a society where there's a lot of chaos, but we need strong rulers to come in and enforce that order according to those traditionalist social arrangements. And so democracy is not as helpful in this sense, because it might be that the majority chooses, you know, to use different arrangements to organize society. And so we see and we find that Americans that embrace Christian nationalism are more likely to support rulers who might come in and break some rules in order to enforce the vision that they have, or, you know, they have a comfort with political violence in order to ensure that this country aligns the way that they believe it should.
That makes me wonder. I just want to pause there on that point about approving of political violence or what are the views on taking up arms?
Yeah. So this is a data point that we're seeing across a number of surveys in recent years, where we'll ask questions like, because things have gotten so far off track, true American patriots may have to resort to violence in order to save our country. And we find that Americans that embrace Christian nationalism strongly, around a third strongly agree with that statement. And so this doesn't mean that every American that embraces Christian nationalism might be like those who went to the Capitol on January 6th to commit an insurrection, but they are more likely to approve of those types of actions, or if those folks who were at the Capitol come back to their communities, to not really call them out for it. And so that rise in comfort with violence, I think, is very worrisome, especially for Americans who are committed to democracy, the peaceful transfer of power, and to working together to find a way forward.
Let's bring in Jill in Mount Horeb. Jill, hi.
Hi. Thank you so much. I have so many questions, and this is fascinating. But my question is about religious symbols, specifically in government. And I was thinking about, like, the Ten Commandments. And you don't hear too much about it now, but, you know, putting Ten Commandments in front of government buildings or inside government buildings, I was wondering if that was related versus other kinds of religious symbols. And the one that I always thought about, I grew up Roman Catholic, was the Beatitudes. And, you know, it's like, blessed are the poor and the meek and the hungry, and we should, you know, do all these things to help them. You don't see that kind of stuff in government buildings, but you see the Ten Commandments.
Jill, thank you. What about that observation? Can you speak to Andrew?
Yeah, no, Jill is making a very astute observation, and I think it really highlights exactly what Christian nationalism is and what we're talking about here. Because just like she said, there isn't a push to enshrine or to post some aspects of the Bible, like the Beatitudes, this idea of, yeah, blessed are the poor or oppressed. Or if we look at Luke 4, where Jesus, his first recorded sermon, essentially, where he's saying that he comes to free the oppressed and all these different things, we don't see a push to put those up. But we do see a push, like she said, to enshrine or to show the religious symbols of things like the Ten Commandments, because again, that is associated with these other cultural values and beliefs. And so some aspects of the Bible are in line with those cultural values of Christian nationalism, and they'll highlight those, but others, they will not. And so if we look at that, I think, again, Jill is hitting on a really great way to parse what folks mean when they say, well, we just need to follow biblical principles. Well, which ones? And even when we look at the Ten Commandments in Exodus and Deuteronomy, there are different versions of those. And so which exact version are they talking about? And so that, I think, is part of this conversation that as citizens involved in this democracy, we need to be very clear on and ask folks who are pushing for these to be very clear on what they mean by biblical principles or religious symbols.
We're talking about Christian nationalism in the wake of Mike Johnson ascending to Speaker of the House. Andrew Whitehead with us, author of two books on Christian nationalism. You can join in with your questions and comments, 800-642-1234. Andrew, it's early, but what can you estimate about Mike Johnson, how he might govern as House Speaker?
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting question, because I think in some ways, it's easier for a member of the U.S. House to submit legislation, to, you know, make pushes for aspects of legislation that really align with, you know, particular worldview or the way that they want to see the U.S. move. And I think he's been involved in that since he's arrived. But I think once now he's in this other role, I think it will make it more difficult for him because of all the different factions within the Republican Party and trying to work along those differences. Now, all of them supported him to rise to that level, but I think he will find it much more difficult to try and govern and work with those. And so whether or not he's able to put forth legislation that so closely aligns with, you know, past legislation that he's proposed, will be interesting to track and to watch. But I think the key is that he is in this position of power. And I think that sends a signal to us that when all the Republican colleagues supported him, they were essentially signing off on his stated agenda and the way that he sees the world. And so it isn't as though Christian nationalism is now fringe or you know, is fringe to the Republican Party, but in some ways it's the very center of it. In this sense. Now, whether that translates consistently to legislation, we'll have to wait and see. But now the person with the most, the highest sense of power within the U.S. Congress from the Republican Party really does embrace this cultural framework. And I think that is a very key moment and point to make.
Talking about Christian nationalism and how it fits with the worldview of the new House Speaker Mike Johnson, Andrew Whitehead with us, Associate Professor of Sociology and Director of the Association of Religion Data Archives at the Center for the Study of Religion and American Culture in Indianapolis. You can join in with your question, your comments at any point. Email ideas at WPR.org. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Christian nationalists believe America was ordained by God as a Christian nation. A survey by the Public Religion Research Institute in Brookings finds more than half of Republicans think the federal government should declare America a Christian nation. We explore these views as the new Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson, espouses his Christian beliefs. Call in with a question. Share thoughts. 800-642-1234. We have sociologist Andrew Whitehead, who directs the Association of Religion Data Archives at the Center for the Study of Religion and American Culture in Indianapolis. Let's bring in Nate in Milwaukee. Nate, hi. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you very much. You mentioned the Ten Commandments before, and two of those commandments, one of them says that you should not bear false witness, and essentially mean not lie, and the other is that you shouldn't steal. This made me thought about trying to steal the 2020 presidential election, and I wonder if the potentially willingness to accept dishonesty leads to bad ripple effects within this group, especially since you mentioned being willing to break some rules, and I'm like, wait a second, how about this rule?
Nate, thank you. And Mike in Shell Lake, go ahead. Mike, hi.
Yes, I want to say with this, where I get started, I'm not so much of a Christian per se. I struggle with it, but I am surrounded by many Christians and I guess what you call nationalists, and we don't promote or condone violence of any sort. It's the other side that has been promoting and condoning and using it as a weapon for several years now. So what this whole narrative is completely one-sided and bogus.
Mike, thank you. Andrew, what surfaces for you in the discussion points from Nate and Mike?
Yeah, well, I think there's some key points there. One with the 2020 election, you know, what we do find is that Americans that embrace Christian nationalism strongly, they are much more likely to also embrace the big lie that the 2020 election was stolen, even though, again, there's no evidence of that. And the lawyers representing Trump, you know, three of them now in Georgia have said that they were guilty of those false and misleading statements. And, you know, that's something, too, that we saw with Mike Johnson. He really did lead the charge to say that, you know, the 2020 election, there were improprieties or different things like that, despite any evidence. And so, yeah, this is something that we see across the American public. And then, you know, with the second caller, you know, I can speak to the survey data that we've gathered. And so with Americans that embrace Christian nationalism, we do see those that strongly embrace it are more open and supportive of political violence. You know, around a third say that that is something that they would support. And that isn't to say that those that reject Christian nationalism don't also, but it is much, much lower numbers. And so it isn't necessarily that there's just a problem on one side. But in this sense, when we look at those that embrace Christian nationalism, it is those folks, those Americans that are more open to political violence than Americans in any other group. And so that's the survey data as it's presented. And so it's hard to argue with that.
Bill from Wausau wants to know if you've heard of the magazine The Christian Century. And Bill finds the message of the magazine to be liberal and progressive and says it fits with their understanding of the broad Christian message. And Andrew, how do progressive liberal Christians view Christian nationalism?
We tend to find that they are less likely to strongly embrace it, various aspects of it. And generally, we see for those various other expressions of Christianity that tend to be more progressive, a greater comfort with different types of diversity and, whether it's religious or racial and ethnic. And so there's less of a commitment to a country that only serves or focuses on their particular view of how society should be aligned and functioning, and a greater comfort with working, you know, with different religious or non-religious Americans. And so it tends to be more ecumenical. And so those are aspects that don't align with Christian nationalism, because again, with Christian nationalism, it's the desire to privilege this one particular expression of Christianity that tends to be quite conservative, both religiously and politically. And so progressive Christian spaces, they do have work to do to root out and be aware of Christian nationalism, but it tends to be a little bit less of an issue because of their openness generally to working with folks across religious and racial lines.
So where is then Christian nationalism and the elements that you lay out for us? Where is it being spread? Is it at the pulpit? Is it on social media? Is it in other ways?
Yeah, that's a really great question. And I think it's almost a both and all of the above. And so Christian nationalism throughout history really has been created and perpetuated within primarily white Christian institutions, so denominations and congregations. So there are those that it would get preached from the pulpit. And then through different media organizations too, we see this rhetoric and these ideals propagated and supported across media. But in many ways too, because it has such a long historical trajectory, it has in some ways become like the water around the fish, right? We don't even necessarily recognize it in some communities. I know that was true for me growing up. It was just the way things are. And to the extent that it's taken for granted and just is, that's when it's most powerful. Because for many folks, embracing these different elements of it is what it means to be Christian. And so to disentangle those is really difficult. But in that sense, it isn't necessarily various actors spreading it, but that it's been a part of our body politic for so long that in some ways it's caught more than it's necessarily taught. But it doesn't mean that there aren't folks who are trying to teach and spread it as well.
Andrew Whitehead from the Indianapolis-based Center for the Study of Religion and American Culture. As we look deeper into Christian nationalism, you can join in questions, comments along the way, 800-642-1234. Jolene in Chippewa Falls now. Hi, Jolene.
Hello. Yes, my question is, okay, they're talking about creating a Christian nation and having the United States be a Christian nation. Well, which Christianity are they going to pick? Catholicism has saints and, drinking, wine and that stuff is very acceptable. Methodists don't believe in drinking at all. There's a big difference between Baptists and Catholics and Lutherans. And so which Christianity are they going to pick?
Jolene, thank you. Andrew.
Yeah, Jolene, that's a really wonderful point. And I think that's exactly the types of conversations that need to be raised is when this rhetoric or these types of phrases are used almost offhand, this should be a Christian nation. I think Jolene's right on where we say, well, then what type, what brand, right? And highlighting that there are a lot of expressions of Christianity operating in the United States that disagree with each other on, as they see, very important topics, whether it is, as she pointed out, alcohol or saints or salvation or the end times or anything, or even which translation of the Bible to use. And we see even in U.S. history, those types of discussions and fights, even among Christians, as they thought, well, what type of translation of the Bible should we require within public schools? They couldn't come to an agreement on. And so that, I think, underscores not only the danger, but ultimately the inability of trying to say, well, there's this one particular expression of Christianity that should be privileged in the United States. Because again, there are so many, which one would it be? And how would that even work? I think that's a great way to think about it going forward.
Amy in Madison is wondering, what role does grievance have in white Christian nationalism? What about dissent among the Christian nationalists?
Yeah, that's a really great question, too. One of the elements that we also find that comprises Christian nationalism is a sense of populism that really leads to an embrace of conspiratorial thinking. And so this is where, for many Americans that embrace Christian nationalism, feeling as though they are persecuted and victimized in some way, and this opens them up to more conspiratorial thinking and believing that there are folks, elites, who are out there trying to get them. And so Speaker Johnson has embraced a number of these. And we find as we survey the American public, that's also in there. But yeah, I think a sense of grievance, whether it's true or not, is really powerful in creating this strong desire to, again, see this particular vision for the United States come to pass. And whether that's setting aside the norms of democracy or embracing political violence, those feelings of grievance, and whether it's based on truth or not, is really powerful. And I think is a very important topic to keep our eyes on as we try to think about the future of democracy in the U.S.
Matt in Madison wants to know why Christian nationalists would support Donald Trump when the former president, Matt says, doesn't appear to be very compatible with the stated goals of the movement. And Matt adds that the former president appears to know little, if any, scripture. What are your insights there?
Yeah, well, I think Donald Trump in many ways is the perfect test for the power of Christian nationalism and the political utility of it, because as Matt's pointing out, Donald Trump, even in his own words, doesn't necessarily accept or align his life or beliefs with many of the fundamental aspects of the Christian faith or personal piety. But what he does promise is access for those who embrace Christian nationalism or a particular vision for the United States, access to political power. And he came through in a big way, and many Americans and leaders who strongly embrace Christian nationalism to this day praise Donald Trump because of what he did for their movement. And so for those that embrace Christian nationalism, it isn't whether or not the person that they have in power aligns with Christianity, but will they provide access to power? And power is that key central aspect to Christian nationalism as a cultural framework.
Andrew Whitehead, Associate Professor of Sociology at Indiana University, Purdue University, Indianapolis, writes books about Christian nationalism, and there's space to talk. Call in with a question, share your thoughts, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We examine the Christian nationalism worldview, how it affects American politics and democratic institutions. And we have Andrew Whitehead with us, Associate Professor of Sociology at Indiana University, Purdue University, Indianapolis. Let's take another call now. Don in Merrill. Don, hi. What would you like to bring up?
A couple of things. Thank you for taking my call. I actually was raised Christian, and now, and in my early adult life, I went to a Bible college and really dug into the theology of the Bible. And now I am atheist. That's besides the point. The idea of our forefathers, the proposition of our forefathers to keep this country separated, church and state, means that religion should not have any equation within government. That's point one. I don't see any gray area there. Secondly, I see the idea of making the United States a Christian nation as a stepping stone for increased violence and for equating it to similarities of other countries throughout the world that have religion within their government, a theocracy, and having those religious beliefs as reasoning why they possibly commit certain actions, such as the subjugation of women or violence or something along that line, beheading of people, say in Sharia law. And it's a stepping, I see it as a stepping stone in a very, very, very dark path.
Don, thank you for the call. Andrew, what comes up for you?
Yeah, I think, you know, these are really important perspectives to hear and to take seriously, especially for those that might, you know, be sympathetic towards the idea of privileging Christianity in U.S. government or believing, you know, well, this is just our history. I think it's important to note, you know, that the Constitution doesn't mention God once or Jesus, and that the Declaration, you know, talks generally about the Creator and providence. And those are really important points that it isn't intertwined in the founding documents. But the key here, too, is that with Christian nationalism wanting to privilege, again, a very particular expression of Christianity with American civic life, what it's stating and highlighting is that this is a country that is not for folks outside that group. This country and what it is supposed to align with in this worldview is that this is primarily a country created by and for these folks, for the benefit of these folks. And so for me as a Christian speaking out against that, so that folks who do not identify as Christian, I want them to feel as though they are a part of this country. Their views and realities need to be heard and be a part of it. And I think Christians and Americans who are committed to a democracy need to speak out and say, no, this is a country where, despite our many religious differences, all should be able to have a say, participate, take part, and be able to identify themselves as true Americans.
Then looking at that worldview, how do American Christian nationalists, how do they view other countries?
Yeah, well, I think this is a key point, too, where some parts of that narrative, and we see this in actually survey research when we ask, it's a belief that the United States has a particularly elevated place in God's plan for the globe and for the world. And so when we look at foreign policy or views towards other countries, essentially folks that embrace Christian nationalism strongly believe that the U.S. is a force for good in the world, and whatever it wants to do is a part of God's plan for the world, and to have strength and project that strength as they see it anywhere, whether it's militarily or otherwise, is again part of the work that it is supposed to do across the globe. And but then that actually ends when folks from those other countries come here. Americans that embrace Christian nationalism are less open to that. And so really, it is about seeing the United States as elevated, as over and above other countries.
Let's bring in Luann now in Hales Corners. Luann, hi.
Hi. Great program. I wondered what happens to people in America who are not Christians when under the nationalist Christian rule. What happens to people that are not Christian?
Andrew?
Yeah, well, I think some of this is looking at the legislation and political policies that are supported by those that do embrace this, or through survey research, what we can see. And I think essentially what we would find is that for those Americans that don't embrace or don't align with these particular views and this cultural framework, they're essentially going to be on the outside to varying degrees, right? So this country and identifying as an American won't fully apply to them. And so depending on how different, you know, a person or an American is from aligning with these views, they may have no access to particular civil rights, whether it's marriage or adoption or where they can move or where they could work or where they could live. And so I think that's the key aspect, is that the Americans that would be able to benefit most from different social policies and the benefits of being a citizen will be more and more limited. And this is particularly true with the democratic process. Who gets to vote is no longer a right of all Americans, but it's viewed as a privilege. And privileges can be taken away, especially from those groups that don't align with the stated goals or vision of Christian nationalism writ large. And so I think that's some of what we can really expect and see in the vision of the United States within this worldview.
Andrew, going forward, are there specific legislative proposals that we should watch for that would link to Christian nationalism?
Well, I think in the very near term, I think being aware of where and how different policies or proposals are put forward that limit access to the democratic process. So who gets to vote? How easily can they vote? What is being done to roll back access? And we do see a lot of these being proposed across different states, across the United States, whether in, you know, in just very recent memory, Ohio, where Republicans were trying to raise the level that different aspects of the ballot had to reach, right? So if somebody, if Ohio residents were going to vote for something to pass, it had to be 60% instead of a majority. Well, Ohio residents came out against that. And then in this, you know, just this past Tuesday, they voted to legalize marijuana and also to legalize access or keep access to abortion. And so it's movements like that where the democratic processes and who has access to it is being shifted and changed that Americans should be aware of, because those are being done with a particular vision in mind. And I think that's in the near term what we really need to be aware of.
In our final moments together, how has studying Christian nationalism affected the way you practice your faith?
Yeah, this has been a key point and one that I try to share in my most recent book, where disentangling Christianity from Christian nationalism has been key. And it really revolves around expanding how I define, or how we define, who our neighbors are. Not just neighbors of those like us or see the world like us, but as Christians, are we committed to helping and serving all of our neighbors and expanding how we define who a neighbor is, and allowing, again, an expansion of this, of who can have access to the benefits of the many good things it is that we have access to being citizens of the United States and also being citizens of the world.
Andrew, thank you for joining us.
Yes, thank you so much. I really enjoyed the conversation.
Andrew Whitehead, Associate Professor of Sociology, author of two books on Christian nationalism, directs the Association of Religion Data Archives at the Center for the Study of Religion and American Culture at Indiana University, Purdue University, Indianapolis. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.